So I'm Kathy Hoke. It says Kathleen on there, but I prefer Kathy. Either way is fine, though. I have so many titles that I saved the final slide for those, so that you can whatever title you would like to call me. But I am a professor in the clinic at the University of Maryland Francis King Carey School of Law in Baltimore, and I am in my 12th year teaching. So when Stacy said that mid-level career professionals are up to 10 years, I became a little depressed sitting over there. Because 12 is bigger than 10. So apparently I'm senior. Kind of like when my cat went to the vet at age 8 and they said, well, she needs to be on the senior food now. And I said, don't let her hear that. You know? So in any case, thank you, Stacy, for bursting my bubble. No, but I joke. But I'm going to talk to you about the public health law clinic that I teach at the law school that has really transformed over the course of time. Just as an example of something that I think really could be adapted for a variety of different settings in combination with schools of public health, at schools of law, or situated simply at a school of public health. So I always love putting this slide up there because currently I'm actually divorced, and so I actually have no relationships to disclose. So I'm available. No. So the clinic, let's move on. So this is just a bunch of words from the course catalog, but I thought I'd put them up there on the slide. But this is what I'll call the course component. So what do we do in my class? What does it look like? And so this is how we explain to the students from a marketing perspective, why should they sign up for this course? But as you can see, it really means as we use the Gostin text. And actually, I kind of stopped using the text itself because it's so large and unwieldy, but pieced together parts of articles that are really drawn or that appear cited in the text and like, and then we can keep it fresh each semester. But we really are aiming to some of those, the core public health law issues that were top on James's list that are being taught, that's what we try to incorporate in the classroom component. For my students, one of the most important things is to understand the interplay between federal, state, and local health departments, because it's, you know, when you're in it, you know, but they make assumptions about what the federal government is doing, and they think the CDC takes care of everything. We know that's not true. And so much of what is going on in public health law is occurring at the local level, and so it's really important for them to get that. And then we have lots of discussions in class about the process involved in developing sound public health policy. One of our best classes is taught by my colleague, Carrie Lowry, who's in the room, because she can teach epidemiology for lawyers. She dumbs it down for those of us in the room who don't have an MPH, but so that they can understand what a sound evidence base is and why they need. Then we talk about, you know, things like the Constitution, why you need to have a rational basis for your laws or a greater standard in other circumstances. So it's a clinic. So my students are actually working outside of the classroom on a variety of different projects. The source of those projects is actually, and Carrie, please don't tell anyone, but do you see that it says Public Health Law Network? I had a brain freeze when I created this. We've changed the name. Are you ready? It's now the Network for Public Health Law. I know. But, I mean, it's been changed for over a year. I have no idea why I typed that out, because I'm a senior, apparently, is why that happened. But in any case, the Network for Public Health Law, which is RWJ funded, and the Legal Resource Center for Public Health Policy, which used to be the Center for Tobacco Regulation, recently changed its name. We operate with some state funds as well as funds that come through the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene in Maryland from the Community Transformation Grant. So both of those entities are providing technical legal assistance to public health practitioners, to legislators, to advocates, really to anyone who comes to the table. And so that's the source of the work for our students. That is something that is, I recognize, unique in our institution. But I have some really good thoughts about ways that other places, if you don't have a center like this in your school, how you might find other ways to find work. Number one, we can always give you some because we have plenty. So if you want to pilot something, we could certainly work with you on developing a pilot program. But that's the source of work for our students. And then the projects, the most important part, what are they producing? What are they working on? This is just what we describe to the students as far as what they're working on. But the core parts of any clinical education, clinical legal education, are in there. They have to be able to do research. And then this is the research that throws them for a loop because some of it's non-traditional, right? So they've learned how to research in Westlaw for cases and for statutes. This really pushes them outside the boundaries. Often they're looking for local laws. Sometimes you can find them online, sometimes you can't. Sometimes the online versions are outdated, so they're learning about what is available and what is not available. But they're also forced to use for the first time something like PubMed, which freaks them out because it's not Westlaw. And so we have to walk them through that process. So they're really expanding their research skills. And then the analytical skills. How do we take what we've learned about this public health problem, either from our request for technical assistance or from what we're learning from the field, and is there a law response? Is there a policy response based on what we've been able to discover in the research? So really a lot of that traditional type of work. And then hopefully legal writing, which is my personal favorite part to work on with the students, but that they can produce issue briefs and other documents where we can really get in with them and have them improve their writing skills. And I say we because I don't do this alone, but I have a slide that acknowledges the folks who do it with me. Just the basics. It's a one semester course offered for 6 credits. We meet formally as a class once a week for 2 hours, but then there are team meetings. Most of the time I put the students in groups of 2, possibly sometimes in groups of 3 or 4 if there's a major project that can be broken down into sub-projects. But then they're required to work 24 hours outside of class, and so in addition to that 2 hours, they're producing work for that 24 hours. We meet at least once a week with them. And Carrie, how often do we respond to their emails? Constantly? That would be constantly. We are constantly responding to their emails and excuses for their lack of timely submissions of materials because they're mostly 3Ls. And let's face facts, at this point, the 3L students are just panicking about getting jobs. It is 2L eligible, but it's a competitive process to get into the clinic or during the registration process. I don't pick them, but they have to use some sort of lottery numbers to get in. And so, by and large, we have 3Ls in the class. I will say this is something that is also different for Maryland. We have a clinical requirement for all of our law students, except our evening students. And so, you know, I can act like there's high demand for my class, but they have to have a clinical experience. But what the Public Health Law Clinic has provided for students is those who are not interested in the traditional legal clinic of, you know, landlord-tenant or criminal defense, the really litigation-oriented clinics, an opportunity to do a policy clinic. So while we get a lot of students who are interested in public health law, we actually get a lot of students who are simply interested in a policy practice. And so we hope to turn them into public health law attorneys when they're in the classroom. In fact, Carrie and I were just talking about a student who we're working with who we found through the business law program, and we'd like to turn her into one of the good guys. So we're working on that. She'll probably make more money the other way, but, you know. So in any case, this is just a little bit of a breakdown of what the classroom component looks like. We have the standard what is public health law class in the beginning, Carrie's EPI for lawyers class, and again, as I indicated, the state and local breakdown. And then we have classes where we talk about, you know, this is the part that differs from year to year. If students are working on, for example, hydrofracturing or you know, seatbelts in all positions or something, we will do a class that talks about some of those particular issues. And those I sometimes have the students take lead on so that they're teaching the classes themselves. And then the students' favorites, of course, are the interactive and role play sessions. It's also clear from James's materials, this is what folks would like to have access to, and I'm happy to provide you with any of the role plays scenarios that we use. The vaccine exemption one is their favorite because they can talk about who comes up every year? Jenny McCarthy comes up every year in that class. So I'm kind of sick of it, frankly. So I might have to change it out for my own freshness. But every year it's very successful. We have one that's about place matters, meaning really using social determinants of health to show about this child, Sam, all of the different ways where he lives affects his health and the role that different legal professionals play in why that's Sam's life and how they could improve that. And then we also do mock hearings. So during the spring term, some of our students will actually get to testify on legislation before the Maryland General Assembly. We do so on invitation of members of the General Assembly. So it's not lobbying, they're providing technical assistance, but they are able to go down and testify. And so we do in-class mock hearings where their classmates serve as the state legislators. I should invite an actual state legislator, Mike Freiberg, one time to serve. And you can, you know, feign indifference. Like I always assign roles. You pretend like you're not paying attention because that's what it'll really be like for them. And, you know, so, I mean, then we have what we call firm, yeah, right, what? Not in Minnesota. but we have what we call firm meetings. So every 5 weeks or so, we get together and we talk about our projects. And it's amazing to see that process where, you know, one student was working on something and the other student didn't really realize, hey, had you ever thought about this? Or I found this article on this. I can't tell you how many times just getting together and talking as a class. I didn't do that for the first several years of teaching because I thought that was considered me being lazy, right? Because I'm not responsible for that. They are. This was from student comments in my faculty evaluation saying, we didn't really know what everybody else was doing all the time. And so I've embedded that into the course, and we've all been better for having done that. And then I try to do a little bit of career advising. Where might you go with this if you really are interested in it? Typical student projects, the infamous 50 state compilations, usually with an accompanying issue brief. We love and hate these all at once, right, Carrie? But they really are very helpful. And we have found for our customers for the Network for Public Health Law, these are really valuable documents. And then sometimes we realize there's not enough for an issue brief, but they'll create a fact sheet. Now, I've given you some examples here. They're all on the network's website. Or small technical assistance requests, and I just popped a couple up there that have been recent ones. You know, does the Maryland Clean Indoor Air Law apply to taxis? We can't give direct legal advice, so we have to couch it in terms of here's what the law says, you can reach your own conclusion, or we'll talk to their local council and say, they've asked us this question, here's the answer, would you like to tell them? But the students will respond to all of these things. They each will write a blog post for the network. Again, you can find them on our website, and then as I indicated during session, they might be testifying. I have a full team that helps me supervise. That's why I can have 10 students in clinic. It's really exceeding the faculty to student ratio if you only considered me as the teacher in a clinic. But I have this full team available to me. I like to note that several of them with the asterisk are former students who we're now have on the payroll. So the law school loves me, right? Because when that little survey comes out about who's employed, I give them lots of, So that's great. We also just want to talk really quickly about some interdisciplinary projects. I'm going to skip that slide. We are situated on a campus with other school professional schools, as well as have a relationship with College Park, where there's a School of Public Health. But there are two projects that I just wanted to highlight here where we did interactive work. And so this is new for us. We're really exploring it and hope to improve upon it. The first was a court watch program. We heard from some of the advocates in domestic violence that courtroom procedures in Maryland could use improvement to help victims of domestic violence feel more safe, to have the process give them that sense of confidence. And so we undertook a court watch where we had students watching DV cases, and our students first designed the survey instrument, with Carrie's assistance. And then they trained social work students from our School of Social Work to go out and do this, which amped our numbers up tremendously as far as how many observations we were able to do. Ultimately, the law students prepared an issue brief. I had hoped to make that collaborative with the School of Public Health, with the School of Social Work. It was really some logistical hurdles. The semesters don't match exactly, and I actually had to take some leave that semester, and so we weren't able to really get it done that way. But that would have been an even better experience. experience. And so we're hoping to advance something like that in the near future. And then we had this one class where we went down and did a joint class at College Park with undergraduate public health students, where we gave them the evidence issues associated with older drivers, put them in teams of law students and public health students, and said, what are some ideas that you might come up with to help alleviate the injury prevention concerns here and the other issues that might arise? And it was a phenomenal experience for us and for them, because they started all at different places. But each student group reported back that they absolutely learned a lot from working collaboratively with their colleagues from a different discipline. That was our goal number one. And that they thought their ideas for problem solving were better and enhanced as a result of that experience. So, win-win there. Our connection down at College Park left, and so we have yet to get back down there to do this, but we hope to do it again in the near future. Just a couple of reflections. Students are highly interested in public policy and increasingly in public health policy, so there is demand out there. Don't worry if they will enroll, you know, build it and they will enroll. And clinical education, the Carnegie Report, everything in the industry tells us practice-ready attorneys are what folks are looking for. So if you can incorporate clinical work in your public health law teaching, I think that would be terrific. And it helps with the basic student experience so that they can, at the bottom line, be attractive to employers. And we have a really good success rate with where our students are going. And this is just a slide that indicates some of that. And they will often tell me, they were told by their employer it was your clinical legal experience in public health law that set you above the rest of the applications. So there you go. And I'm happy to share my syllabus. All of my titles, I think. Thanks.